Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Hope your day is going well. We've got word from the city of Los Angeles that Echo Park Lake will be reopening in 1 week. Wednesday, the 26th. The park opens at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's been under repairs for a couple of months, and over $1 million has been spent on cleaning up the park. This followed the eviction of unhoused Angelenos who had been living in the park for a considerable period of time. We turn our attention right now to the future of the workplace and to public venues. UC Berkeley conducted a poll looking at California voters' attitudes about requirements for either full vaccination or negative recent COVID test as a condition of returning to the workplace or going into places like arenas, convention spaces, other public venues. What the poll found is that nearly two-thirds of California voters support concert venues, sports stadiums, cruise ships, and casinos requiring either proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID test for entry. We see a big partisan difference there, with 82% of Democrats approving and 66% of Republicans disapproving. Also, looking at whether employers should be allowed to require that their employees returning to the job are vaccinated for COVID-19, 79% of Democrats support that idea, that employers would make that a requirement. Republicans, only a third supported the idea of that happening. And the question is this going to be the norm for workplaces, that they will require it? And is that ethical, particularly before the final FDA approval is given to the vaccines that we have that are being distributed under emergency use authorization? We also have this morning's Los Angeles Times story that Cal OSHA, in a meeting tomorrow, is expected to take up dropping a mandate for distancing at work sites as well as masking at work sites when everyone who is working at that location is fully vaccinated. With us to talk about the bioethical issues are two terrific guests. We begin locally with UC Irvine Chancellor's Professor of Law and Director of UCI's Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy, Michelle Goodwin. Professor, so good to have you with us again. First of all, what do you think about employers potentially making vaccination a term of returning to the workplace?
Well, it's a pleasure to be back with you again. Let's be clear that in places involving vaccination, they've been able to lawfully require vaccines for some time. Think about schools. It's not a new concept. In fact, it's something that has been established for decades, upheld by courts, that schools could require that students be vaccinated in order to attend school. And only within limited circumstances or exemptions could a student attend school and not be vaccinated. And so there's law that supports this. But one of the things that you've been speaking to is the partisan politics that surround this, the differences between Democrats and Republicans, and the fact that many people are saying that our courts are no longer just the neutral bodies that they used to be, but that they've been affected by partisan politics. And so if there are legal challenges, one question will be, how might courts respond if it is true that courts have become victims of partisanship?
And there's also the issue of inclusiveness, right? Because if you're an employer who doesn't want to exclude your employees who might be conservative and might be against a mandate like this, how you sort of include them in the process, that's a challenge.
Well, it is. And so since you're talking about inclusion, it's a very interesting thing, because what has emerged over the past year is that we've seen people that we conflate as being anti-vaxxers who are actually not. So as we think about equity and inclusion, you know, one thought has been that, well, there are poor parents of color who don't vaccinate because they're opposed to vaccination. That's actually not true. Poor parents of color actually do vaccinate their children, but their children often may lack that second vaccine. Those who are anti-vaxxers actually have typically come from high-end zip codes. And they're people who like to shop at Whole Foods and who like healthy products and whatnot and are concerned about what is in a vaccine. But what we've seen today and what's being conflated are those who have a political opposition. 2 years ago, probably a very large percentage of those people who are identifying themselves as being opposed to vaccines would have vaccinated. This became a politically charged issue during the Trump administration. And I believe that 2 years ago, a large population of those people who now say, I don't want to wear masks, I don't want to be vaccinated, would have been people who, understanding that a pandemic is afoot, that they could be harmed, would say, yes, get me the medical treatment that will help me. And so employers now do, I'm sure, want to be concerned about this. And I'm sure restaurants and other venues want to be concerned about this. But they also want to be concerned about the broader health and safety. What about if they allow people in who could infect other people? They would want to be concerned about potential lawsuits resulting from that. And so wanting to be equitable and inclusive also means, excuse me, being mindful of the employees that you have there and making sure that you have a safe work environment. And that, too, goes back in law and public policy as well. Employers can't have places that are unsafe for their employees to work in. And that's well established.
Michelle Goodwin with us from UC Irvine, where she's Chancellor's Professor of Law and directs UCI's Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy, also author of numerous books. And our pleasure to have back with us medical ethicist Arthur Kaplan, Professor of Medical Ethics at New York University School of Medicine. He also directs NYU's Division of Medical Ethics. He's also on the journal Lancet Task Force on the COVID-19 vaccines and a member of the Vaccine Working Group on Ethics and Policy. Professor Kaplan, very good to have you with us again. Your thoughts about whether this is going to be widespread, what we see in the workplace, a requirement to be vaccinated?
Hey, great to be back. I think we're going to see more and more of vaccination required for entry to workplaces, for entry to colleges, for entry into public facilities like bars or gyms or hair salons. As Michelle was just saying, employees have long had a moral duty to make the workplace safe, whether it's wearing a mask or wearing a moon suit or doing many other things required of you in the workplace to make sure that it's safe for you and it's safe for your fellow employees. Morally, I think the right stands for the employer or the hotel, cruise ship, venue it might be, is to say, we're going to be safe. We're going to make sure that the vaccinated folks are in here, and that if you're unvaccinated and unmasked, you won't be. No one's forcing a vaccination on you, but I think you're going to find yourself with a lot more opportunities for work and a lot more opportunities for play if you get vaccinated. The other sort of moral issue is making sure that vaccination is something we can authenticate. So keep your card that you get when you're vaccinated. I wouldn't be throwing that away. I'd keep it close. I'd take a picture of it. I'd have it handy, because right now that's one path to proving vaccination. There are some private companies out there pursuing apps, and they may come into play. They're probably going to connect to your doctor, who will certify that you've been vaccinated. but they're going to cost money, so the poor won't be able to get those as easily as the rich. But yes, I think we're going to see it. And one more point, we're starting to see it internationally and as a requirement for travel. European Union, Canada, other countries are starting to say you can come here as a tourist if you're vaccinated or and you have a negative COVID test.
The EU coming out with that this morning. Professor Kaplan, what about that small group of people? It's admittedly small, but the population for whom they can't be vaccinated, it's medically contraindicated. Is there something in lieu of vaccination that would allow those individuals to have the same rights as those who are fully vaccinated?
Well, morally, I think, and legally, you have to try and accommodate those people. By the way, we have mandates in healthcare environments, hospitals, nursing homes for flu shots. California has them, where I am in New York has them. But you try to accommodate someone who has a legitimate health reason by giving them a job where they might not be in clinical settings, they might be in the back office. You may say you have to mask and test frequently in order to work in settings that are closer to clinical settings during flu season. So you can try to help. You can try to make an accommodation. But there probably are some jobs, a nurse on a bone marrow transplant unit, where infection risk would be lethal to the patients, where you can't easily accommodate. And I'm afraid, you know, that job just isn't going to be open to someone who hasn't vaccinated all the way through.
Professor Goodwin, what about the legal issues of a false verification? There undoubtedly will be a robust market in phony vaccine cards. Are there statutes in place that treat that as criminal, or is this something that legislators are going to have to look at crafting laws against?
Well, this is an important issue, and it affects both thinking about apps that can be hacked, and it also involves thinking about the paper-based product, which is what we have now. And what that exposes are infrastructural challenges that have not yet been met by the United States federal government, or quite honestly, by states. Now, there is tracking. And so those who have gone through getting COVID vaccines, they will know when they showed up for the second shot. In most places, they're able to pull up the first shot. They have the information that is that's stored somewhere. But there isn't great clarity and transparency in terms of where is this data stored? Is it connected, for example, to one's driver's license or ID? Can it be connected to one's passport? These are the issues that one hopes are being worked on, but this also exposes the time that was lost over the past 12 to 15 months, where we could begin to develop the appropriate kinds of infrastructures that would make it easier to validate that individuals have been vaccinated. And so right now, there is a lot of vulnerability there, so that even the arenas, the hospitals, the bars, the restaurants, et cetera, that want to have healthy environments for their employees and also their customers, have to use what we have. And that is what Art called, you know, this piece of paper. And I agree with him. Take a photo of it. Right now, states and the federal government can begin that work of legislating in this space to make sure that people are discouraged from developing these fake cards and whatnot. And this raises another issue, which I'm sure you're going to get to, which are vaccine passports. And how that should be rolled out. Should it be electronic or should it be paper-based? And that raises additional issues in terms of access and equity,
well,
too.
Well, and your university is in Orange County, where, as you well know, there was a crowd of, I believe, more than 100 people who turned out to the last Board of Supervisors meeting to protest even a pilot program of creating a vaccine passport. So you're going to have a tremendous amount of pushback to that. But I also wonder on the other side about people who are just going to be fearful of returning to their workplaces. cases if Cal/OSHA removes the requirement for masking or distancing among fully vaccinated people. Do you think, Professor Goodwin, that people are going to be in that place by the time that happens, that they'll be ready to return to the job and feel safe? Or do you think that's still going to be a tough sell to a certain segment of the population who's going to still want masking indoors, still going to want distancing?
Well, Larry, you're such a great interviewer, and it's a great question. And what it exposes are the ways in which people are sometimes vulnerable to their economic situations. And so I think about it in two parts. There are people who want to return to work. They want to be gainfully employed. And sometimes people feel as if they have no choice. So even if they want to return, they want to return in the safest, healthiest ways possible. And some people feel that sometimes they have no choice. And there will be people who want and need to return to work, even if it means that returning to work could potentially expose them to some virus harm. One of the things that we haven't talked about are people who are immunosuppressant, who actually have gotten the vaccine, but still remain at some level of vulnerable. For those people, even though they've done their part by getting vaccinated and returning to work, they still can be vulnerable to people who have not been vaccinated who come to work. And I've already heard of cases and know personally of cases of individuals who have been vaccinated, and people should be, get your vaccines, but who have later contracted COVID.
We're talking with UC Irvine Chancellor's Professor of Law, Michelle Goodwin. She directs UCI's Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy. Also with us, bioethicist Arthur Kaplan, professor at New York University School of Medicine. Professor, I wanted to ask you, because you've been a real, you were an early proponent of the idea of the vaccine passport. Do you think that's going to be able to fly, given that there is significant resistance to the concept?
I do. And I'll tell you, one change may be right now we're still operating with FDA approval under what's called emergency use authorization. The vaccines that are out there, Pfizer, Moderna, Janssen, look so great and the data was so impressive and the safety so good that FDA said, we'll let them out early. They did the right thing. COVID death rates and hospitalization rates are plummeting. We know vaccination is worth doing and it's absolutely working. As soon as these vaccines get licensed, full licensure, probably 3 months, maybe 4 months from now, I think you're going to see mandates. I understand that there are opponents, and I understand there are people saying don't create the passport program. But it's one thing to say, I don't want to get a passport, and I'm not going to be vaccinated. It's a different thing to say as a private business, you want to work here, you have to be vaccinated. I think hospitals, nursing homes, the military will take the lead on that. They have been in the forefront of mandatory vaccination to protect the kind of people that Michelle was talking about, immunosuppressed, older patients, vulnerable, frail people. The military has to deploy in all kinds of environments and places where COVID could be breaking out. They had problems on their ships, the Navy ships, listeners will remember. So I think you'll see them coming, and then I believe they're going to snowball. Plus, who isn't going to want to travel and do student exchange and start to be able to move if you can indulge those things by having the passport that other countries require? I'm a little upset that the Biden administration hasn't even got moving on giving us an international vaccine passport to supplement our passport. The rest of the world is going to head in that direction. If we're going to move around in it, I think we're going to have it.
Art, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Professor Arthur Kaplan of NYU, Professor Michelle Goodwin, UC Irvine, joining us on Air Talk. And we have Jose in Indio called to say that on a CVS app, if you've been vaccinated at CVS, that also will show under your prescription history that you have been fully vaccinated. Thank you for that, Jose. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the reopening of theme parks in Southern California. It's essential that I hear from you. If you've attended a theme park since reopening, whether it's Disneyland, Universal, Legoland, Whether you've been to any of our local theme parks, Knott's, I want to hear from you what the experience has been like. What did you like? What gave you pause? And what sorts of changes would you like to see your favorite park undertake in the coming weeks? We're at 866-893-KPCC. We'll continue with Air Talk in just 1 minute.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.